have things to say, who will have things to say in the future, and the fact that they're being done the way they are, and the fact that they're being done by people who really care about what's going on in America, is, I believe, is going to make a difference. And it's not a small thing that's happening there, and I'm very happy to see it happen.
That was Neil Adams speaking on an early episode of Nuff Said. To hear thought-provoking and entertaining discussion on the subject of comics, tune in every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. for Nuff Said, here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. And visit our website, nuffsaid.net, for our upcoming schedule of guests. See you there.
This is WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight, inviting you to stay tuned for Earthwatch.
The bell for freedom still rings. Sorrow to me, but does it bring to know the bell of freedom still rings? The hammer for justice still pounds. The hammer for justice still pounds. Heavy is the beating sound. Millions of babies still starve. We can't have the biggest heart if millions of babies still starve. And the innocent ones still die. The innocent ones still die. We can't value life too high if the innocent ones still die. Truth we won't let shine. As long as I thrive, there's still a day. life is still a day. And I know that we can find our way. For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
Because all men are brothers, wherever men may be, one union shall unite us, forever proud and free. No tyrant shall defeat us, no nation strike us down. All men who toil shall greet us, the whole wide world around.
My brothers are all others, forever hand in hand, where chimes the bell of freedom.
Thousand years, are safe now. Hunger stopped him. He lies still in his cell. Death has gagged his accusations. We are free.
This is WBAI New York. My name is Robert Knight. And as I was saying, it's great to be back. This is the first broadcast of Earthwatch in a little while, and we're going to catch up on some lost, strayed, and stolen time tonight. This is Earthwatch, and we're going to tonight catch up on some lost moments in time and look at some moments for future growth and take calls from you, the listeners, and those who have sustained the power of this radio station throughout the years. And it is such an eerie feeling to be back at this radio station, the most important one in the world. And I'd like to take another moment to meditate with some peaceful music. And we'll be back with Steve Cates and the Skywatch Report. Some thoughts about Martin Luther King, and some thoughts about your community radio station. Do stay tuned.
If I were free to speak my mind, I'd tell a tale to all mankind.
WBAI New York. My name is Robert Knight, and we begin with a revisit to an old friend who has kept our eyes to the sky. Steve Cates joins us now with the Skywatch Report. Good morning, Steve.
And good morning, Robert. Very interesting and very happy to be back here on WBAI, as I'm sure many of you listening and any of the people there. Welcome back, and look forward to continuing our saga of what's visible in the skies for all the many friends of WBAI as we continue to talk about things that you can see even in one of the biggest light-polluted cities in the world. And, Robert, to start the program off, I know the old tradition was, of course, to go right to it as to what's in the sky, and certainly that'll be the tradition as we continue. We look to the sky first, folks, with the one major event and major object in our skies in the New York area, and that is visible passages of the International Space Station. And as many of you know, you can go to my website, which is www.drsky.com. That's just drsky.com. And you can learn a whole wealth of information about what you can see in the skies around the world and right in your environment and local area. But, Robert, the visibility of the International Space Station is something I think very fascinating because this is an object that people can see in our skies that do not require telescopes or binoculars. And I'm just going to highlight two major passages that I'd like everybody to be aware of. One very good passage of the ISS over the New York City area will occur on the morning of January the 20th. And if sky watchers look to the northwestern part of the sky, starting at around 5:56 in the morning, you will see the space station itself sailing across the skies from the northwest, moving there from the northwest to the north-northeast. At about 5:56 in the morning, as I mentioned, if you look 68 degrees or so high above the horizon, a little bit more than halfway up in your sky, you'll see this white, bright beacon of light as it sails across the sky. But if you miss that, another good passage, an equally bright passage, will occur on the morning of January the 22nd. You get to see another good passage of ISS on the 22nd at 5:41 a.m. local time, when this time, just a little bit lower in the skies of the New York area, you'll see the space station pass about 56 degrees above the horizon. And what a beautiful sight it is to see this. I know many people have sent me lots of emails and have commented about the brilliance of this object as it continues to get brighter in the sky all the time. The reason simply is the ever-growing and expansive nature of the space station itself right over us. An object that will hurtle across the sky at some 17,000 miles per hour, as you all know, but an object that is easy to see. And no, you cannot really get to see much detail on the space station itself, even in a high-powered telescope, though some people I know around the country have imaged as the space station goes into the shadow of the Earth, when it, of course, just about fades out. You get to see some detail on the object itself. But, Robert, one of the traditions that we've had on this program, and again, it's wonderful to be back here and wish the greatest of success to all the staff and the folks of WBAI and all the listeners out there for a great 2002. But we've always spoken complete about the objects that you can see in the sky, like planets. And the sky is, of course, not devoid of planets itself right now. As we celebrated the new year of 2002, the most magnificent of all planets, in my opinion, right now to see is the beautiful planet Jupiter. All you need to do is look into the northeastern sky at the time the sun, of course, sets, and you'll get to see one of the best passages of the planet Jupiter in about the last 5 years. I was visiting with a friend up in a cabin in Payson, Arizona, about an hour's drive to the north of Phoenix, and regularly where we view in the darkness of the Arizona sky. Looking at the planet Jupiter in a telescope of about 8-inch diameter is most impressive because you can see a tremendous amount of detail on this object right now, well over 500 million miles away. In the telescope, Robert, the object is just outstanding. And there's going to be some opportunity for folks to see a lot of detail on the planet itself. I'm going to recommend a few ways in which you may want to look at the planet if you have a telescope. And for those of you that do not, all this information, of course, is available on not only our website at drsky.com, but also on many of the other websites around the world to continue to keep you updated on objects and viewing with the planet Jupiter. But one of the great things that's happening with Jupiter right now, Robert, is the great storm that's on this planet, the Great Red Spot. It's very easy to see and more pronounced than it has in years past. And I'd like to highlight one opportunity for the listeners to get to see the great Jovian Red Spot, at least with some clarity. For those of you out there listening with small telescopes and you're pointing them toward Jupiter, pay particular attention to Friday evening, January the 18th. Just a few minutes before local midnight, exactly at 11:54 p.m., you will get to see the Great Red Spot as it's called transiting across the disk of the planet. This is the best opportunity to see the red spot because it's almost pronounced near the center of the planet. And what it looks like in a small telescope is quite amazing. It almost looks like an eye. And to some, the Great Red Spot is described as the eye of Jupiter. What is it? It's an incredible cyclonic storm in the upper atmosphere of the planet, something that for the last 400 years nobody on the Earth can really explain the dynamics exactly of what this particular object is. But what's important is that just to the right of the Great Red Spot, this particular red spot is now moving into another storm, and they're literally colliding together. We don't know what will happen when these two objects, will they come together and form a unity, or will they help to destroy the Great Red Spot? I tend to doubt the red spot would be destroyed. But you can see that, believe it or not, in a small telescope. And one of the statements I've always made on this program is you can recreate that same experiment that Galileo himself did, supposedly on the night of January the 7th of the year 1610, when he viewed in his rather crude 30-power telescope the discovery of three of the then-to-be four famous Galilean satellites, the satellite Io, Europa, Ganymede, and Callisto. And something that the news services have been reporting on regularly is the fact that one of the greatest spacecraft ever created here on the planet, the great Galileo spacecraft, will be soon coming to an end as far as imaging the giant planet Jupiter. I believe it's either late this week or early next week, Galileo will be taking some of its last photographs of the mighty king of the planet, so to speak, the planet Jupiter. And then eventually the planet, this satellite, I should say, will cascade into the fiery atmosphere and great pressure of the upper atmosphere of planet Jupiter itself. But remember, when you look skyward and get to see Jupiter, remember, this is the other object in the solar system that, other than the Sun, creates the most gravitational stress throughout the entire solar system. And for us here on the Earth, that might be a good thing indeed. Because every so often, as early as 2 or 3 weeks ago, the Earth gets visited by what we call near-Earth asteroids. These errant little objects, some upwards of a mile, some smaller, that do pass the Earth exceptionally close. And if you haven't heard of the passage of a small asteroid that occurred back on January the 7th by only 2 lunar distances from the Earth was visited, very interestingly, by a newly discovered asteroid known as 2001 YB5. And what's interesting, folks, is that there are more asteroids like this than you would believe that come very close to the Earth. We found out today, or I should say yesterday, that 2 small near-Earth asteroids, both within a very good safe distance of the Earth, passed, well, close to the Earth. And when I say close, that's within 1 million miles of the Earth. One, a small asteroid known as 2002 AO11, an object some 75 meters in diameter, small for an asteroid. And another object also passed the Earth yesterday, designated as 7341 1991 VK. These are small asteroids, this one about 1 kilometer in diameter, but all within a, quote, safe distance away from the Earth, and nothing as close as what we had on January the 7th. But the reason I mention that is that the planet Jupiter is like a large vacuum cleaner in the solar system. It hopefully pulls in many errant objects and keeps it within the Jovian gravitation system, and thus hopefully keeping them away from the Earth. But it's a little bit more complicated than that. And since the time we were on the air, quite a long time ago, we've done a lot of research ourselves, and one of the big campaigns that you'll be hearing about on this program from time to time is our study of the need for the people on planet number 3, the Earth, at least in my opinion, to be very cognizant of the dangers of the near-Earth asteroids. PHA is also known as potentially hazardous asteroids, and the NEAs, the near-Earth asteroids, are of great interest not only to myself, but to a lot of people out there. Because if any single event from the heavens that could disrupt life as we know it, other than us doing our own thing to destroy our own atmosphere or what have you, we have to look skyward, folks, to the possibility of someday, and I'm sure it will happen, not to sing the song of doom and gloom, but it's very much important, not only to the program host, but I'm sure to the vast numbers of listeners out there of WBAI, to keep you informed of what's happening. Some interesting asteroids, one known as 4179 Tautatus, which we'll be speaking about in very many future programs. But Robert, I'd also like to end this report, if I may, with just another quick analysis of some of the planets that you can see. Look low into the southwest, you'll get a glimpse, though barely, of the planet Mercury, one of the most interesting little planets that goes around the Sun, as we know, once every 88 days or so. Venus, unfortunately, is still in the glare of the Sun, and when she once again emerges from the solar glare, we'll have about 6 months of seeing the planet Venus in all of her splendor. Believe it or not, the planet Mars is still very much in our sky. All you need to do is look low into the southern part of the sky. This rather faint object, now in the constellation of Pisces, is small enough to be mistaken as a star in a telescope, not large enough to be identified as a planet, because unfortunately none of what we had back last summer is available with the planet Mars. The great dust storm of last year has continued obscuring a vast majority of the Martian surface. But wow, it was beautiful last June when we all looked to the planet and could see such great detail. And we'll get another great opportunity in the year 2003 to see Mars come exceptionally close to the Earth, well within the 34-million-mile mark, which is fantastic. As I mentioned, Jupiter's the real showstopper of planets. Look in the northeast just after sunset. You'll be absolutely thrilled when you look at it in a small telescope, and even, Robert, in a pair of binoculars, you'll see a little string or bead of objects along the equatorial plane of Jupiter, even in binoculars, if you hold them steady enough. That is the major satellites, mostly three or four, that can be seen at any given moment. And lastly, the planet Saturn. Still an object that's way up in our skies, high up into the south as we approach the early evening hours. And it's a fantastic object to see in a small telescope. Again, Jupiter and Saturn, the two dominant evening planets. Jupiter well over 500 million miles from the Earth, and now the planet Saturn about double the distance in the dark, deep recess void of the solar system, where temperatures are nothing like we know it here, well below 300 degrees below zero, an object almost a billion miles away, invisible in your telescope, and you can see the beautiful ring system. And Robert, one of the things we never had a chance to talk about was last year's wonderful Leonid meteor shower. And I'll leave it to the listeners with their computers to hopefully join us at the Dr. Sky website. But what I think was one of the most fascinating nights, though it's a historical item right now, on the night of November the 17th and 18th, we've got many emails from our friends in the New York listening area of people seeing an incredible amount of Leonid meteors. This year was one of the best Leonid showers I've ever experienced. And you out there, somebody out there, I know, a large number of you, I think would also agree. When the skies rained forth hundreds of Leonid meteors per hour, in our vantage point from Payson, Arizona, we got to see well over 500 meteors per hour. And on our website, as you'll look at the archives, you can see a most fascinating report of something that I myself still cannot believe that I witnessed and heard, a fireball Leonid moving over the Arizona mountains, where we actually heard a sonic boom. We also have a video clip of us capturing a Leonid meteor with what appears to be, and many scientists are still in the process of analyzing this short, brief video file, where you see the streak of light and you hear some sort of a thunderclap or a sound. And it is quite amazing, Robert, to be part of something like that, to have experienced this whole entire event while we were doing a live radio broadcast linked up with a NASA NKC-135, like a KC-135 aircraft, that was patrolling the skies the night of the Leonids, the most special night. And there'll be many more special nights. And as always, Robert, it's really fantastic. It's like a dream come true to be back here live on WBAI. And a special heartfelt feeling, of course, to many of the families who, of course, lost loved ones in the horrible and tragic events of 9/11, which I know, of course, being a person from New York originally, just like anyone, this really impacted us in many ways and still will. So our hearts go out to all those that lost loved ones. We certainly are thinking of all those folks as time continues. But, Robert, that's pretty much a synopsis of what's going on here in our skies and what you can see in yours. And I look forward to some great times here, hopefully getting out under the telescope, talking about what we see and how to view it, and I want to thank all the listeners for being interested and sending me emails all through the process of when are we going to be back. Well, it looks like we are, and I'm most grateful to you and the listeners of WBAI. Thank you.
You know, Steve, I'd like to think of it as a sabbatical, and one of the things that kept my spirits high during our unchosen exile from this radio station was the sky and keeping a sense of dimension and watching the Leonids.
Did you get a good view of it?
A perfect view from the southernmost point in the United States in Key West, Florida, where they just radiated throughout the sky in the hours before sunrise. A day that was consummated with the flesh of an iridium high above, just as the sky turned blue. Looking at the radar installations pointed at Cuba that are now tracking the flights of prisoners coming in, watching the sky is very good for my soul. And a lot of people say that what you do here on Earthwatch is good for their souls too.
Well, thank you for the nice comment. It's something that, as you know, we started, maybe some of the new listeners may not be aware of this, but in spite of all the naysayers, I was younger than I am now, and so were we all. But I remember coming to this radio station on previous attempts before I knew you and talking about trying to get something on the radio to talk about what people can see in the sky. And at that time, it was met with great skepticism and, frankly, rejection. And I owe you a bit of great everlasting gratitude for, you know, having the confidence to put the program on there. And it's expanded, as many of the listeners may or may not know. I've expanded to doing my own regular weekly shows, radio-wise, and local television here continues, and on a national basis. And I'd like to invite you, as time goes on, when it's convenient for your schedule, to be my special guest on our program to reminisce about a lot of things and get your perspective on many things. So I look forward to that, and good to be back.
Well, we'll see you next week, Steve Cates, with the Skywatch Report here once again on Earthwatch on WBAI in New York, and all of your thoughts are welcome. Once again, thanks, Steve.
Thank you
for being around, and thanks for staying around.
My pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this. This is Earthwatch on WBAI in New York. My name is Robert Knight. We're back. And the spirit of activity, inclusion, and people around here doing things. Many, many more people than there used to be here. It is a sign of health. I was last able to host Earthwatch on the 18th of July, 2001. And during that week, there were resignations on the Pacifica National Board. The following week, I went to Texas to cover the rounding up of half the adult male population of a town in Tulia, Texas, one of the most egregious examples of racial profiling, but something that happens throughout the country. Sometimes it's useful to not just talk about race, but to bring new information about it. That's what I was trying to do on that week. And I brought you some samples of what you might have heard several months ago. My name is Robert Knight, and you are listening to Earthwatch.
I think the sheriffs and the police officers who surround us believe in what they are doing just as much as we do. This is a battle for the hearts and the minds, and we are involved in a debate. We are not adversaries. We are brothers and we are sisters trying to find our way through difficult issues and difficult times. We have gathered because we believe a great injustice has been perpetrated, and we will continue to speak out because it is our right as Americans to say what we believe without embarrassment or fear.
Here in the darkness, in front of City Hall, candles, lighters, flashlights are being lit, bringing a new brightness to this Tulia night, where 46 people were indicted, convicted, or accepted plea bargains, tantamount to guilty, because of a runaway drug sting operation spearheaded by one Tom Coleman, using extraordinarily unorthodox and undocumented methods, his word held up in court against those he targeted after being given a list of alleged drug participants by the local sheriff.
To me, they was targeted all blacks. I mean, and all young blacks, really. And, you know, I mean, it ain't like we dumb. We knew he was the police. He just say, can I get some crack? And he a white man that we don't know. I mean, it ain't like we was dumb. But a lot of my homeboys was arrested. And when they came to jail, they told me about it. I mean, and all they could say is, man, we couldn't put no clothes on, man. They had us out in boxes. The TV news was already there. Then my girl write me a letter when I'm in jail and tell me that the housing authorities had already sent them eviction notice. I mean, it was like it was all one day. I mean, how would everything go that fast if they didn't have it planned? I mean, they wouldn't even let people put their clothes on. And they walking on TV news and boxes, hair messed up, no shirt, no shoes, no socks. I mean, you should have seen how that made them feel. I mean, that's just like taking your manhood.
When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from singing?
Amen.
Yeah.
Reverend Doctor, we're here at the stroke of midnight in Tulia, Texas, walking from the public park to the downtown area, periodically crossing corners with patrol cars, police, sheriffs, highway patrol, and so on. What do you think is the historic significance of this moment?
Well, I think the historic significance is that it puts us in relationship to the liberation and freedom struggle that's been going on in this country and around the world for the last half century. It's important that we are lifting up many of the same issues in terms of human rights and freedom. It's important that we see the continuity between the civil rights struggle of the 60s and where we are now. I think that one of the ways in which those things that were gained and the progress that was made has been eroded is by the way in which the war on drugs has come and been a part of the way in which we've seen, you know, just the systematic, you know, deterioration of rights and personal freedom. So I think it's really important that we think of this moment not in isolation, but rather we think of it in the context of being a part of a much bigger struggle that's been going on for human rights and for justice and for freedom for a long time. The fact that the problem has been responded to purely in punitive terms instead of being responded to in ways that talk about education and prevention and addressing the real systemic problems that are at the heart of the problem. The fact is that people who are disenfranchised and people amongst the dispossessed are people who always are most vulnerable. And once again, that's manifest itself. So I think it's important for us to speak up, speak out.
Do you believe that the drug war and the communities targeted is just a new way of reinforcing Jim Crow?
Oh, clearly it's the new Jim Crow. I mean, all you have to do is look at the numbers and look at the way in which it has directly impacted the lives, especially of African Americans. I don't see how you could deny interpreting it that way.
And finally, is the war on drugs historically analogous in any way to what you have spoken of, Martin Luther King's declarations on the Vietnam War? Is there a change in leadership and consciousness taking place? Is there a comparison to be made?
I think there's a definite comparison to be made because it challenges the posture of this particular system in a way that I'm convinced causes folks to have to deal with the fact that what has happened is that the war on drugs has turned out to be a way in which people are profiteering and taking advantage of the of a position of disadvantage for others. I mean, if you look at the whole prison industrial complex, the way in which it's grown and the way in which it ends up being fueled by this, you know, so-called war on drugs, then you find yourself realizing that this is something that ultimately is being, that people are profiting from. Folks are, you know, they've come to have, you know, financial self-interest in perpetuating this war the way it is. It's not doing anything to end the war. You look at the number of prison beds that are being built, this whole pattern of mandatory sentencing that we have seen does nothing but continue to fuel that system. I call it the new black gold. It's like blind mining in the black community and taking people and incarcerating them. And they're making money off of it.
You've spoken also of the union among people of color and people who are white. Is that significant tonight?
Oh, I think it's very significant. When you look at this group, it's not just one people. It's all people. They're Hispanics, they're Europeans, they're people of African ancestry, they're Native Americans. We're all here. We all recognize the fact that we're being victimized by this war and that we have to speak in one voice if we're going to end it.
In downtown Tulia, Texas, I'm Robert Knight. Thank you.
Yeah.
was lost, but now I am found.
Sounds of Tulia, Texas, finally on Earth Watch here on WBAI New York. We have more tonight. Stay tuned. Recognize the melody. This is from a Bach composition sung by Peter, Paul, and Mary. Felt right because the road that we're traveling on, and it feels right because I got that feeling in Tulia, and I'm getting it here now in New York at WBAI, that it is time for free speech at last. Free speech. At last. God Almighty, free speech at WBAI. Going to take a moment to acknowledge today's, or this week's celebration or remembrance of the life of Martin Luther King. We'll be back after this.
Left Atlanta this morning, and as we got started on the plane, there were six of us. The pilot said over the public address system, "We are sorry for the delay, but we have Dr. Martin Luther King on the plane, and to be sure that all of the bags were checked, and to be sure that nothing would be wrong on the plane, we had to check out everything carefully, and we've had the plane protected and guarded all night. And then I got into Memphis. And some began to say the threat, or talk about the threat that were out. Or what would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report. Here is Don Hickman in Memphis.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shot outside a Memphis motel this afternoon. His position is not known at this time. Police put out a wanted bulletin for a young white male, well-dressed, who was seen running from a brick building across the street from the Lorien Hotel. Police said the assailant apparently jumped into a late model white car after the shooting and sped away.
Repeating that bulletin, Dr. Martin Luther King was shot outside a Memphis hotel this evening. His condition not immediately known, but he was taken to a hospital.